Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Ray, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% list-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Never remain free if they are not willing, if need be, to fight for their vital interests.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Praise Yahweh and pass the ammunition.
The Restoration Hour with Pastor Eli James.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here. This is the Restoration Hour for May 19, 2018. Pastor Eli James, your host, broadcasting freedomslips.com and eurofolkradio.com. And today's message is going to be about Jesse James and the fascinating life that Jesse had, and his membership in the KGC, the fact that he actually saved John Wilkes Booth, and who's also a KGC member, Knights of the Golden Circle, and that John Wilkes Booth, and both Jesse James and John Wilkes Booth had assumed various aliases in their lives in order to escape detection. In fact, Jesse James, I think, lived to be over 90 years old, if not 100 years old. And so these two gentlemen have had very interesting lives besides being involved, major figures in the Knights of the Golden Circle during the Civil War. And so I'm going to start with the story of Jesse James. This is on the Knights of the Golden Circle blog spot. And probably many of you have never heard of the Knights of the Golden Circle before you started listening to my shows, but the Knights of the Golden Circle are the mainspring, the group that enabled the South to prosecute the Civil War. Because without these organized troops who were drilling and doing target practice and preparing for the Civil War well before, for several years before the actual war broke out, before Fort Sumter. This is why the South was able to so aggressively prosecute the war early on, because they had the Knights of the Golden Circle as a standing army. But from this website, knightsofthegoldencircle.blogspot.com, there's an article entitled Jesse James was one of his names. And Jesse James was, aside from the various political leaders of the Confederacy, Jesse James was probably the most important person of the South during the Civil War, because what his job was to rob the stagecoaches, the railroad trains, the banks, and grab as much cash and gold as possible for the Confederacy. And toward the end of the Civil War, when Jesse realized that the South was going to lose, he started stashing this gold in various places in Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Texas. And he had symbols that he would carve on trees and on rocks to give directions to future KGC members as to where this gold was hidden. And there's an active industry in those four states of people looking for this gold. They've analyzed the symbols and figured out what they mean and are trying to find them in the woods of these four states. And this can be a deadly enterprise, because if you enter a territory that a gold digger, for lack of a better word, a gold digger has mapped out for himself, and he's found some of these symbols, and he's looking for the gold, or the, you know, a cash box or whatever. And if you come sneaking into that territory, you may never come out. So this is serious stuff, folks. This is serious stuff. In any case, the article is Jesse James was one of his names, posted by Philip Cromer, K-R-O-M-E-R. The following information is from a book which is out of print and has become very difficult to obtain. Whether or not the information presented below is true, I will leave to the reader to decide. Actually, there have been a lot of documentaries on the History Channel and other places documenting Jesse James' connection to the Knights of the Golden Circle and the gold and other treasure that he has stashed away. And part of the reason for his stashing this money away was because once he realized that it was a lost cause, this money was to be used for a second uprising on behalf of slavery. So they didn't want to give up. Even after losing the Civil War once, they were saving up money for a second battle. And this is what Jesse James, this is why he was hiding and stashing all of this gold and treasure in these four states. So the author continues, because of the extreme rarity of the information, I feel I am justified in posting it here for the benefit of those who otherwise would not be able to access it except with great difficulty. And that is true. In my research on the Knights of the Golden Circle and the Freemasons, and the Jews who caused the Civil War, This information is very difficult to find. Very difficult. You actually have to get to the nitty gritty. You have to access the articles that were published in the day during the Civil War and just leading up to the Civil War of what the true attitudes of the people were. Because this information, the conspiratorial information, is very hard to dig up. Very few people have collated it, organized it, etc. And so the information I've been presenting about the Civil War, with the Rothschilds instigating the war and financing both sides and agitating for both sides, this is something that you will rarely hear anywhere else. Yeah, but this is the fact of the matter. The Rothschilds instigated the American Civil War. They financed both sides. And short of overthrowing the Union, they would kill as many white men as possible, which is basically what happened with the Civil War. So, and they were trying to establish a central bank. This goes all the way back to Andrew Jackson, when Jackson refused to recharter a central bank. They murdered Lincoln for the same reason. They murdered several other presidents for the same reason and eventually got their central bank. It's called the Federal Reserve Bank. And the Jews, through the Rothschilds and their other Jewish agencies, have dominated the American economic scene and therefore the political scene, social scene, etc., ever since Woodrow Wilson signed that malicious act into law. Okay, he continues, I have left quite a bit of the account out, but the really important parts have all been included. If you need the complete account, you will have to obtain the book somehow. There are a few copies of the book available in public libraries scattered across the U.S. Also, the Library of Congress owns a copy. And the book is Jesse James Was One of His Names, published by Arcadia, California, Santa Anita Press, 1975, by Del Schrader, S-C-H-R-A-D-E-R, with Jesse James III, okay, so one of the descendants of the actual Jesse James. And chapter 8, The Odyssey of John Wilkes Booth, pages 133 to 142. And so here is page 134. The Knights of the Golden Circle, the top Confederate underground organization, headed by another quote-unquote dead man, Colonel Jesse Woodson James, had another version. Prior to the Civil War, J. Wilkes Booth had attended a military school, but had been bounced because he was too impetuous. Well, I've told you that J.W. Booth was in fact a Jew. When the war broke out, Booth volunteered for the Confederate Army, but an officer was impressed with his intelligence and ability to interchangeably talk like a Yankee and a Southerner. Yes, the Jews are chameleons. It was decided Booth could do more than shoot a gun. After a short training course, Booth was soon moving back and forth through Union and Confederate lines with valuable military information for the South. And he was a good pal of Judah P. Benjamin, Wilkes, another Jew, the big Jew of the South, who was alternatively the treasurer, the secretary of state, and other and the personal advisor to Jefferson Davis, which gives you some idea of the court Jew, how significant and how powerful he was with the Confederacy. So his value as a spy and agitator was far exceeded by his value as a soldier. Okay. After a short training course, Booth was soon moving back and forth through Union and Confederate lines. At times, he used the name John Botha. That's his original family name from Britain, Botha, the last name of a Russian Jewish ancestor who settled in England. Posing as a drummer salesman, he sold material of war to both sides. Didn't I tell you the Rothschilds supplied both sides? While he was a competent enough spy, Booth had some traits which bothered his superiors. He asked too many questions about Confederate plans, and he enjoyed gathering gossip about rebel generals. At times, the Confederates had Booth under surveillance, believing he could be a double agent, which apparently he was. Despite their suspicions, Booth continued to deliver damaging information on Union moves, and he did it in record time. So, Booth was able to cross the war lines with relative ease, probably because he had all the intelligence of, where the armies are located. Because, if you're a northerner coming into southern territory, you could easily get shot by a southern soldier and vice versa. So if you know where the armies are, you can avoid those areas and move relatively freely. This is what John Wilkes Booth was able to do. In spite of his service, Booth was never able to advance above the Knights of the White Camellias. Now, Knights of the White Camellias was a pro-slavery Texas secret society, later to become part of the Ku Klux Klan. But this was strictly limited to the state of Texas at this time. The Knights of the White Camellias, the third-ranked Confederate secret organization. Okay, they don't mention the Freemasons. Okay, so the Freemasons would be on top, the Knights of the Golden Circle would be second, and the Knights of the White Camellias would be third in Texas, because I'm not aware that they were actually active outside of Texas until the Civil War started, when, of course, they came in and fought for the South. He brought ill-conceived schemes to kill President Lincoln, General U.S. Grant, and other high-ranking Union officers to his superiors. Put down as a loner, Booth boasted of personal friends who would help him commit the acts. Confederates doubted his leadership, and some of his friends were checked out and denied membership in any of the Southern secret organizations. Why? Well, many of them were alcoholics, and some of them were Roman Catholics, ne'er-do-wells, that it's hard to trust such people. Actually, you're better off hiring an actor to portray such a person. Excuse me. The final year of the Civil War, when things were going badly for the South, Booth did less spying and more plotting on his own. He reported to his Confederate superiors, quote, "A representative of the European Rothschilds called on President Lincoln and offered him money at 27.5% interest, but was thrown out of his office." This is very interesting because it confirms this, the fact that Booth was aware of the Rothschilds. He was, in fact, one of their agents. A few years later, while gathered in the Confederate underground capital in Nashville, Tennessee, the Knights of the Golden Circle heard a report from one of Booth's superiors in which he alleged the Rothschilds incident might have been the turning point in the spy's frustration. "Gentlemen," he said, "I personally think that John Wilkes Booth went to work for the Rothschilds and assassinated Mr. Lincoln on their behalf." Hello? Hello? What have I been telling you? Most Southerners were shocked by the senseless assassination of President Lincoln. The war was over for all practical purposes, and their cause was lost. The Knights of the Golden Circle moved quickly to get Wilkes Booth to safety. He knew too much. Near a village in Maryland, the haggard assassin, his leg broken, was hidden in a wagon load of chicken coops, the first leg of his journey to the free state of Van Zandt, Texas. Continuing with from the book, William S., that is Wild Bill Lincoln, a distant cousin of the president, reported in a sworn statement, quote, "Our branch of the Lincoln family was never satisfied with what really happened to Booth, and I spent 14 years of my life running down the true story. Strangely enough, I learned it from Jesse W. James, head of the Confederate Underground. I was present at Booth's real death," which occurred, of course, many years later. "Colonel James told me that the Confederate Underground had no love for Booth. He had shot the president after it was too late. However, the organization protected him and put the lazy bastard," he's a Jew after all, "on a $3,600 a year pension," which is a lot of money for those days, "as long as he behaved himself and caused them no trouble. But Booth couldn't stand fetters. He's a Jew after all, and he's got to agitate. Because of strict Confederate underground surveillance, Booth pulled up stakes and moved to Glen Rose, Texas, where he operated a distillery." He is a Jew, after all. "He managed to get into difficulty with federal authorities over a special U.S. permit and tax and sent his lawyer to the federal district court in Paris, Texas. Deserting his distillery, Booth moved to Granbury, Hood County, Texas, where he built the city's first stone business building at the southwest corner of Courthouse Square, now used as a restaurant." Man, the history of John Wilkes Booth in Texas is quite fascinating. "He also returned to the stage, a direct violation of his agreement with the underground. Texas Rangers and lawmen, mostly former Confederate soldiers, filed reports with the Knights of the Golden Circle telling about the strange behavior of John Wilkes Booth, alias James St. George. The actor-assassin was drinking heavily, bragging about being the man who shot Lincoln, and boasting about his knowledge of Confederate underground secrets." Well, it ain't so secret if somebody's spilling the beans. Of course, Booth was a braggart par excellence, could not keep his mouth shut, and therefore he was a total liability to the Knights of the Golden Circle. Post-Civil War, that is. Okay, the Golden Circle held a meeting and sentiment was strong for executing Booth But Jesse W. James, who by this time was building an empire in the West, suggested, quote, "I kind of agree with you, but shutting his big mouth for good. But let's let him make a tour of theaters in the West. We'll send along two agents to ride herd on him," which is, you know, way out in California. You know, nobody knows who Booth is. Nobody knows who Jesse James is. And they're both using aliases. Jesse James obviously staged his own death. He shot somebody in the face so that and then planted his personal items on the dead body. So that fooled the authorities. Meanwhile, Booth had hired a lawyer to write a book about his secret life and how and why he shot President Lincoln. Well, because he's a Jew. Then one night in 1902 or early 1903, Jews love to assassinate our presidents. While Bill was sitting in Colonel Jim McDaniel's Jesse James hotel room in Guthrie, Oklahoma, when a book was tossed his way, McDaniel said, "Believe it or not, Wild Bill, that book was written by one of your men in the White Camellias, old John Wilkes Booth, alias Edwin Booth, alias James St. George. The Knights of the Golden Circle bought up most of his press run, but there's a lot of dynamite in the book. We're still preparing for the Second Civil War. As I told you, that was the purpose of the Knights of the Golden Circle, was to prepare for a Second Civil War. And Booth is busy revealing a lot of our secrets. He knows more than any of us ever thought." Well, he was an agent of Judah P. Benjamin. Hello. Excuse me. Needed a hit of coffee there. In a sworn statement at Zephyr Hills, Florida, on October 1, 1950, William S. Lincoln said, "While trying for years on my own to run down the John Wilkes Booth mystery, I landed right in the middle of the Jesse Woodson James mystery without half trying." In the spring of 1903, McDaniel said, quote, "The end is coming for that scoundrel, John Wilkes Booth. I've spared that rascal's life many times. The Golden Circle just had a meeting down in Texas, and we voted to execute Booth. We know he's registered at the Grand Avenue Hotel in Enid, Oklahoma, tonight under the name of James St. George." How's them apples, folks? Why doesn't the History Channel do a documentary on this subject? You will die before that happens. Let's continue. A half block from the Grand Avenue Hotel that night, a young Indian boy was selling lemons from a small basket. The colonel stopped and said to Wild Bill, have this kid make you about a quart of lemonade pronto while I duck into this drugstore. Can you smell what's coming? Have the kid make a quart of lemonade while I duck into the drugstore. Four Golden Circle agents sat in the lobby while the other three joined the two agents already surrounding the hotel, just in case Booth made a run for it. "Mr. St. George expects us," the colonel told the desk clerk, and he started up the steps, followed closely by Wild Bill with a jar of lemon juice. The door was unlocked, and the two men could see the shape of a man lying on the bed. Careless. Booth was a careless Jew, very careless. Being a hot night, Booth, it's being quoted, speaking to Booth. "Being a hot night, Mr. Booth, we brought you something cool to drink. Now, Wild Bill, you talk to Mr. Booth while I fix up his drink." Jesse went over to the washstand with a jar of lemonade. Hastily, he pulled two bottles from his pocket and poured pure arsenic into the jar. He then stirred the mixture with a table fork. He poured the loaded lemonade into a glass. Approaching the bed, Jesse said, "Now, Mr. Booth, I think you've had enough alcohol for tonight. This lemonade will really fix you up. I personally guarantee it." Booth gasped. went into an almost a stage fall, but hit the floor with a thud. Jesse James bent over and felt his heart. Deader than a mackerel, he said. Okay, they forgot to mention whether or not he had drunk the lemonade. Apparently he did. Deader than a mackerel, he said. Wild Bill, stay here. I'm sending up the four agents in the lobby to go through Booth's luggage. I'll be back in a few minutes. Now get this, folks. This is Wild Bill Lincoln, a relative of Abraham Lincoln, and Jesse James putting an end to John Wilkes Booth. Do you sense the irony? Do you sense the irony? It's an incredible story. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. If I were a Hollywood producer, I'd turn this into a soap opera right away, and it would have record viewers. So they found Booth's luggage, and they continue the story by saying, quote, the six men were amazed at the records Booth had kept through the years. After they had finished sorting it, Jesse said, you know, men, I'm just glad Booth didn't put all this in that crazy book his lawyer wrote. He could have put a noose around all of our necks. Colonel James then directed his men to plant just enough evidence around the room so that U.S. Marshals could identify the dead man as John Wilkes Booth. They then took the trunk and departed. Late that afternoon from Guthrie, Jesse had an agent send a telegram to the U.S. Marshal's office telling them that John Wilkes Booth was dead and where his body could be found. You can bet that that memo raised some eyebrows. 3 days later, Jesse, accompanied by Wild Bill and two agents, went back to Enid. The clerk said, whole bunch of lawmen were here yesterday morning up there in Mr. St. George's room, but his body is still there in their bed. It started to turn black-like and is tough as leather. I guess that's what arsenic does to you. Don't worry, son, Jesse said. We're relatives, and we've come to claim his body. Carting the body of Booth back to Guthrie, Jesse looked up a doctor friend and asked him for a diagnosis. It would appear, quoting, it would appear that this man swallowed so much poison, probably arsenic, that he is permanently preserved. he's like a damn Egyptian mummy. Boy, this needs to be turned into a movie. Through a friendly town marshal, Jesse learned that the federal men had checked out John Wilkes Booth's body and papers in Enid and reported some transient posing as Booth had committed suicide. Okay, so... okay, so this was the analysis of the marshals. Somebody posing as Booth had committed suicide was their analysis. The report listed the dead man's name as James St. George. While Bill wrote years later, quote, was the Booth case still too hot to touch in 1903? I'm sure Dr. Samuel Mudd, along with others, would have been vindicated, and it would have exposed the earlier ill-conceived hysterical investigation. But the U.S. Marshals just turned their backs on the case. Maybe the U.S. government by 1903 had uncovered the real facts in the Booth case and was too ashamed to admit the big blunders made by the government in 1865. Yeah, or maybe the Knights of the Golden Circle and the Freemasons and the B'nai B'rith wanted to still keep the story quiet. Under Jesse James' direction, the leathery, mummified body of John Wilkes Booth was put in a special coffin, and several of his men took it on an exhibition tour all over the United States. Like a mummy. Jesse James 3 reports the Booth body was owned by a Glencoe, Minnesota jeweler named Jay Gould, G-O-U-L-D, pretty obviously a Jew, a relative of the financier, now for sure he's a Jew, who had it stored. This was in 1955, and I believe Gould had passed away. What happened to the body? Who knows? perhaps John Wilkes Booth, hated by both the North and the South, is destined to lie forever, unburied and unwanted. No, he's going to burn in hell. You are listening to the Restoration Hour here at freedomslips.com, simulcasting on eurofolkradio.com, where the truth trumps lies, especially Jewish lies. So if you value truth, if you value this kind of information, and I think this is actually very entertaining, Hollywood can't do any better than this. I can see these scenes being played out in my mind. I can see the actors reciting the lines and the women swooning in the audience. Folks, this is fantastic stuff. It should be published everywhere. But the Jews have too much to hide. You think Jesse James had a lot to hide? You think John Wilkes Booth had a lot to hide? Just think of what the Jews are hiding from us today. All the horrible history, the genocide, the impersonation of Israel, etc., etc. There's such a long list, it'd be a mile long on a roll of toilet paper. So if you value truth, go to www.freedomslips.com, make a generous donation of Federal Reserve shekels, and keep this Freedom of Speech Network on the air. Let's get back to this fascinating story of Wild Bill Lincoln, Jesse James, and John Wilkes Booth. Notes to the above by Philip K. Cromer. For a very detailed account of the Abraham Lincoln Rothschild Booth connection, read the book titled Lincoln Money Martyred by R.E. Search. I've had this book in my library many years. It's a fantastic book on the relationship between Abraham Lincoln and his greenbacks and the Rothschilds and what the Rothschilds were trying to do to America. But it's more an economics book. But it's an outstanding, probably one of the best books on economics you can possibly buy. It has none of the mainstream BS, the academic BS that they call economics. Lincoln Money Martyred it's easily obtainable. Please purchase a copy for yourself. This is a must-read book, Lincoln Money Martyred. Another book along these lines is titled Rothschild Money Trust by George Armstrong, alias Andrew Fabius. See, a lot of these people write these books with aliases because that way they're less likely to be assassinated. Booth hired a lawyer to help him write his life's story. The name of the lawyer is Finis, F-I-N-S-I-S, Langdon Bates. And the title of the book he wrote is Escape and Suicide of John Wilkes Booth. To the best of my knowledge, this book was first published in 1907. Actually, it was published in 1907 by three or four different publishers under slightly different titles. Del Schrader's account has Jesse James referring to the book as though it had already been published by 1902. Whether or not this book had actually been published prior to the well-known and authenticated editions of 1907, I so far have not been able to determine. Well, Jesse James even talked about the fact that this book was being written, so he was familiar with it. But I think he could have destroyed the contents, but there wasn't much of the damning information that they found in that chest. So Jesse James could have easily destroyed that paperwork as well. As to the Knights of the Golden Circle, here is more information from Del Schrader's book, but I will not be giving the page numbers and the information will not be in any particular order. So these are simply interesting facts about the Knights of the Golden Circle. Quote, the Knights of the Golden Circle, perhaps smarting from backing a loser in Mexico, closed down and sealed the records in 1916. They simply merged into the Freemasons and in some cases into the Ku Klux Klan. But the organization run by Jesse James still flourished in 1923, and in fact in years later. Old Jesse did a tremendous amount of meddling in international affairs, and perhaps God alone knows the amount of mischief caused by the outlaw and the Golden Circle underground. one of the deadliest, wealthiest, most secretive, and efficient spy and underground organizations in the history of the world was the Knights of the Golden Circle, which operated over the globe for 65 years, 1851 to 1916. Ranking below the Golden Circle in this order were the Knights of the Golden Stirrup, the Knights of the White Camellias, the Knights of the Inner Circle, the Knights of the Outer Circle, and the International Anti-Horse Thief Association. These were, of course, Texans. The original Ku Klux Klan was the military arm of the Knights of the Golden Circle. There were several dozen front organizations, but only a few received any publicity. Of course, none of these groups receive any publicity aside from yours truly. So you know what's up. The secrecy must be maintained at all costs. Why? Because if you dig into this, you will find out that the Rothschilds were behind the American Civil War, and 600,000 white men were slaughtered. Because that's what the Jews do. That is what the Jews do. And if you don't understand that this is what the Civil War is all about, you know nothing about the Civil War. There were several dozen front organizations, but only a few received any publicity. Some of the craftiest, finest brains in the South directed the activities of the Knights of the Golden Circle. The group was heavy on ritual, which was borrowed from the Masonic Lodge, and later the Knights of Pythias, P-Y-T-H-I-A-S. A couple were members of the Rosicrucians. Now, my view on the Ku Klux Klan is that the Ku Klux Klan was formed post-Civil War to protect white people in the South against the usurpation of Reconstruction, which was instituted by the Rothschild-controlled Eastern liberals, the anti-slavery lobby there, which was always controlled by the Rothschilds. So they wanted to put the hurt on Southern whites, and that's what they did. So the Ku Klux Klan was formed to put an end to that dictatorial control of the South after the Civil War. It was spontaneously formed and had really not, it's quite possible that there were ex or even current members of the Knights of the Golden Circle, but it was formed because of Reconstruction. It would not have been formed without Reconstruction. And that's the fact. So it's hard to link them directly to the Freemasons or to the Knights of the Golden Circle, but it's quite likely that there were many members of those two organizations involved. There were, okay, let me jump down. The 13-man Inner Sanctum, which ran the Golden Circle in the years immediately following the Civil War, elected Colonel Albert DeWitt Travis, alias William Clark Quantrill, and Charlie Hart as its chief. I guess those are all aliases here. He served until his death in the middle 1890s. Secretary of the Inner Sanctum was Uncle George Payne, P-A-Y-N-E, while Jesse James was elected treasurer and comptroller in 1867, when former Emperor Maximilian donated $12.5 million to the group. Didn't I tell you that Mexico was controlled by the Freemasons and the Roman Catholic Church? The other 10 members were General Nathan B. Forrest, John Patterson, alias Jefferson Davis, Bud Dalton, Jefferson Davis was set free by Johnson, President Johnson, Bud Dalton, Professor B.E. Betizek, Lewis Dalton, George Baxter, Captain John James, Coleman Younger, General J.O. Shelby, and Jack Miller. As members of the Inner Sanctum died or became too old to serve, they were replaced up to 1916. I guess by 1916, they realized that there was not going to be a second Civil War. Hope Springs Eternal. Old Jesse James was the head of the Golden Circle when its executive body decided there wasn't going to be a second Civil War and sealed the records in 1916. Old Colonel James admitted in 1949, quote, "Well, the Copperheads, Sons of Liberty, and Order of American Knights were all tied in with the Knights of the Golden Circle, and they rendered a certain help to the Confederate cause. Trouble is, there weren't enough of them. And a lot of them were just misguided, negative nuts." Yeah, they tend to join such organizations. "Who would have rebelled against the Confederacy and aided the North if they had been living in the South?" That's quite an admission by Jesse James. "I never figured this type of person too reliable, and I sure as hell wouldn't have wanted to have ridden into the battle with any of them." With Lee's surrender, the Knights of the Golden Circle membership increased rapidly, along with the subordinate organizations. Well, if you read the records of the post-Civil War South, there wasn't much else to do because the country was devastated, the society was devastated, and joining the Knights of the Golden Circle was a form of entertainment, which it actually was before the Civil War. And when things started to get serious, I'll bet many of them had second thoughts about staying with the organization. So, folks, this is an incredible story. And coming up to the break, I will post the URL into the chat room at Eurofolk Radio. There's a second article. I'll post them both that I'm quoting from here. Now, interestingly, there's also a connection to Branson, Missouri, and Nashville, the Grand Ole Opry. Both of these palaces, for lack of a better word, were started by Klansmen. In fact, there was a Jewish movie producer who actually wanted to do an expose on the Branson Bald Knobbers. The Bald Knobbers were the ones who started the music industry, but it was in neighboring Hollister, Missouri, not in Branson. And for whatever reason, all the entertainment venues moved to Branson out of Hollister. But the Bald Knobbers began in Hollister, Missouri, and it's still both Branson and Hollister are major tourist traps in southwestern Missouri. Their music venues are absolutely phenomenal. You know, because what happens is that a lot of the not-so-famous, not-so-rich musicians who are outstanding musicians, in many cases better musicians than the stars of Nashville and Branson and Hollywood and, you know, the country music awards, these musicians are far better than the performers on their records. And you will witness performances at just about any show in Branson that'll knock your socks off. Banjo, guitar, piano, pedal steel guitar. Wow. It'll blow you away. So if you ever are near Branson, make sure to check out. It's an outstanding performer. You won't hear better music, even if you don't like country and Western. You simply will not witness better live performances than you will in Branson, Missouri. In any case, and that's true of Nashville as well. I mean, Nashville has the same situation with a lot of outstanding musicians who are studio musicians performing for recordings, but who never get any recognition. But they're famous in their own right in Nashville and Branson. Okay, get back. With Lee's surrender, the Knights of the Golden Circle membership increased rapidly. The membership, the Golden Circle, moved into an old building on Fatherland, which I think must be Fatherland Street, in Nashville. The old building stood where the Grand Ole Opry got its start. Before the call came from Contrail, I guess they needed to get release their frustration by performing music. So the Grand Ole Opry is an outgrowth of the Knights of the Golden Circle. before the call came from Quantrill to report to Oak Grove, Louisiana, to map the rescue of Shelby's men, Quantrill had sworn him, that is Jesse James, into the Knights of the Golden Circle, saying, quote, "The day will come, Jesse, when you'll head the Golden Circle. The South shall rise again, and you will lead the way." Unfortunately, that never happened, and the money, much of the money, is still buried in the secret, secret holes that Jesse James, and the caves that Jesse James frequented. So, concerning the KKK, Jesse admitted, quote, "It was the secret military police of the Old South, but the Golden Circle really rode herd on their activities. We began folding up the KKK a few years after the Golden Circle sealed its records for 50 years in 1916. So that explains why there was this hiatus and the KKK was reborn. The KKK actually had three lifespans. We old-timers had absolutely nothing to do with the modern KKK, which is a different breed of cat. Not many people in either the North or South knew that right after the end of the Civil War, we recruited 20,000 Negro KKK members." Let me repeat that. "Not many people in either the North or South knew that right after the end of the Civil War, we recruited 20,000 Negro KKK members." Apparently, not slaves. "They were the most intelligent and reliable blacks we could find. Our theory was that Negroes would take orders easier from other Negroes." Yeah, you're right. "They weren't burning crosses or flogging. They were giving counsel and even financial help to the freed but bewildered slaves." Yeah, they had to be bewildered by so-called freedom. "They kept busy knocking stupid ideas out of Negro heads put there by unscrupulous carpetbaggers, otherwise known as Jews. Only a handful of Golden Circle records remain today. In the first place, not much was written down. It was committed to memory." Now, remember, I reported to you over several episodes, the public statement that the Knights of the Golden Circle made to the people of the South. It was published all over the South, and it was published also in the North, a recruiting paper. And that was one of the few publicly, proclaimed statements of the Knights of the Golden Circle. "Only a handful of Golden Circle records remain today. In the first place, not much was written down. It was committed to memory. Jesse James III, who was raised at his grandfather's knee from the age of 10, grandfather being Jesse James, from the age of 10, probably is the greatest living authority on the Golden Circle, and he is closed-mouthed." Yeah, he wants to die a natural death. Quote, "Many secrets, which I learned from Grandpa, will die with me." Why Muddy Waters? Yeah, well, maybe on his deathbed he'll make a confession. "Many fine Southern families today have ancestors who did violent and expedient things while serving the Golden Circle. I'll let sleeping dogs lie. At today's prices, the buried Confederate treasure would probably be worth at least $100 billion. Dollars. In later years, the Golden Circle was run by 13 of the best and wealthiest men in the South. The master sat on the throne of the East and gave out his wisdom and directions to 12 so-called disciples, who in turn each had 12 disciples. The only way one could get into the inner sanctum or inner circle was when one of the master's 12 died off or retired. There's a lot more involved in the Golden Circle, but that's all I'll reveal. As far as I'm concerned, the rest belongs to the ages." Well, as we stated at the very beginning of the show, this type of information is very much concealed, hard to find, but there's more and more information coming out about the Knights of the Golden Circle, because they were, in fact, a very huge organization. They had they had membership in every state of the Union, not just the South, but also in the North. And those in the North acted as copperheads, which means they agitated against the North in the North as Northerners. So this was a subversive organization in the North and a military organization in the South. And you probably heard me talk about Mr. Vallandigham, who was also a member of the Knights of the Golden Circle, running against Abraham Lincoln, and you know, in the election while Lincoln was still in office. But nobody took him seriously, and Lincoln had Vallandigham shipped across the Mason-Dixon line, where even the Confederates didn't want him. So, you know, a lot of these people who take it upon themselves, you know, he was obviously, you know, a glory hunter. A lot of these people who take it upon themselves to run for the president or whatever are simply ambitious glory seekers. And that's what Vallandigham was. And so was Bickley, the original founder of the Knights of the Golden Circle in Cincinnati. Bombastic glory hunters. So that's the story, folks. Jesse James was one of his names. And this information needs to be made public so that people can understand what was really the influence of secret societies and politics is inestimable. It's inestimable. It's probably 90% of more or more of what goes on in politics is done by these secret societies. And even though the Knights of the Golden Circle really does no longer exist, the Freemasons certainly do. The ADL, which is a branch of B'nai B'rith, certainly exists. And all these Jewish organizations, World Jewish Congress, the American Jewish Congress, etc., these are subversive, secretive organizations. They are secret societies, as Judaism as a culture is a secret society, is in fact a mafia, which operates in almost total secrecy. You know, most Jews are familiar with and members of all of these organizations, one or the other. But they don't know what the leaders of the American Jewish Congress are up to. They simply use these organizations to collect donation money from typical Jews who are terrified that the white people are going to rise up and slaughter them. Well, they may have something there. They may have something there. You know, but when you involve yourself in a secret society and support a secret society such as the ADL and all these other Jewish organizations and subvert America, you're asking for retribution. You are asking for retribution. Any Jews listening? You're probably better off just creeping away silently and making a living on your own and stop getting involved with all of these Jewish subversive organizations. And they will use you and abuse you and refuse you when you cease to be of value to them. Organized Jewry has sacrificed many Jews, even killing, you know, the upper Jews, the Oberjuden, killing the lesser brethren, just to make good on the public image that Jews are being persecuted, when in fact they're being persecuted by their own leadership as a publicity stunt. So, folks, this is the reality of Judaism. Knights of the Golden Circle, C.J. John Wolf.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Wednesdays and Thursdays, 6 to 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are your hosts, Pamela
and Claire, on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Featuring the public law trust, Lyme disease,
and astrology. Witnessing those who harm and holding them accountable.
Guess what? No more secrets. It's about time we snap out of it. This corporate government is a house of cards falling in on itself. The public law. Do no harm.
Syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
Oh, what?
Come here.
What are you going to do, bleed on me?
I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
All right, folks. All right, part two of today's show is still about Jesse James, but more information about John Wilkes Booth. And in this episode, we're going to be quoting from the conspiracyarchive.com. I mean, the internet is so loaded with good information that you'll never get anywhere else. You won't get it in libraries. You won't get it in academia, in schools. I mean, schools are absolutely worthless, especially public schools. If you send your children to a public school, you are doing them a great disservice. Keep them out of the public schools at all costs. especially college, because college is nothing but Jewish communism and a dumbing down process that they will never recover from. If you send your children to a public school, they will turn into complete idiots. All right. What You Didn't Know About John Wilkes Booth and Jesse James by Mark Owen. The outlaw Jesse Woodson James killed the actor John Wilkes Booth at the Grand Avenue Hotel in Enid, Oklahoma in 1903, after Booth continually reneged on his oath to never talk about his secret membership in the Masonic-oriented Knights of the Golden Circle, and to never mention the murder of Abraham Lincoln, as I said earlier. Booth could not keep his mouth shut. He was a Jewish braggadocio alcoholic. John Wilkes Booth did not die in Garrett's Tobacco Barn in 1865, as is commonly supposed. Booth was saved by his brother Knights and spirited immediately down into Texas after the assassination. He lived and worked for many years in Granbury under the alias of John St. Helen. And we found out one of his other aliases was John St. George and a couple of others. So he and Jesse both had many aliases and lived much, both of them lived into 1903 at least. Jesse James lived much longer. So what we're talking about here is, well, in those days you could hide out, especially in the Southwest. You come in and nobody knows who you are. And you give them a name and nobody cares. And, so it's easy to live out your life under an alias. Very easy. We had no Social Security. We had no ID cards. Okay. Why do you think the Jews want to give you a Social Security number and an ID card? Well, it's a surveillance state so that good people can't go unpunished. His own granddaughter, Isola Forrester, affirmed in her 1937 book, This One Mad Act, that Booth had been aided and abetted in his escape from Washington by the KGC. It was common knowledge in the Booth family that he never died in the barn. The man shot and killed in Garrett's barn was James Boyd, B-O-Y-D, a former Confederate agent working for the War Department. He bore a passing resemblance to Booth, aside from his red hair and mustache. So James Boyd had red hair. Booth apparently had black hair. Okay, that's what the next sentence says. Booth's hair was jet black, and he had shaved off his mustache at the home of Dr. Samuel Mudd, shortly after escaping from Washington. Folks, this would make such a great movie. It would break all the box office records known. So, folks, history, real history, is one of the most fascinating, intriguing subjects you could possibly imagine. But the way it's taught in public school and in the colleges, it is boring, boring, boring beyond belief. All right, I'm going to have to take a quick break here. I have a matter I have to attend to here. I'm going to see if this music file will play. I hope it does. Okay.
Don't you cry now!
Welcome back, folks. That was Battle Cry with Don't Cry for the Angels. I guess they're just going to burn. He's talking about the bad angels, not the good angels. And they're going to bite the dust when the time, or going to burn and when Yahshua returns. So we're looking forward. Battle Cry, really outstanding rock band doing identity music, folks. This is identity music. For the white race. Thank you very much, Battle Cry. I don't know if they're still together. I'm trying to, what's the name of this album? The song is Don't Cry for the Album, for him. Don't Cry for the Angels. And I have to back up to see what the title of the album is. It's not showing it on my listing here. But in any case, that's Battle Cry. You can put their name in YouTube. They may have a couple of songs there. A really outstanding band, as Brother Abear says in the chat room, they kick butt. They really do. All right, so let's get back to this story of Jesse James and John Wilkes Booth. And you found out from the previous hour that they were well acquainted. Jesse James and John Wilkes Booth were well acquainted. Probably even before the assassination, because as I've been telling you, Jesse James was the effective leader of the Knights of the Golden Circle during the Civil War. During the Civil War, and would have come in contact with Booth many times. Whether or not Jesse James ever met with Judah P. Benjamin, I've never seen any history about that, because James was simply an underground figure. Their paths may have crossed, but didn't need to, because Judah Benjamin was the brains of the South. He was the Rothschild agent controlling the Confederacy and determining the Confederacy's destiny. And the North, it was the bankers, the Jew bankers, who controlled the North, and they're the ones who ordered the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, because he outsmarted the Jew banksters and issued those greenbacks. So the Jews could not afford for America to go on having its own money, operating independently of the Rothschild banking system. They could not afford that, and that's why they assassinated Abraham Lincoln. All right. Not a single friend of Booth was called to the inquest to identify the body. A Washington doctor named John May had removed a tumor from Booth's neck several months prior to the Lincoln assassination and was summoned to view the corpse. When the blanket covering the body was removed, May stated, quote, "There is no resemblance to that corpse to Booth, nor can I believe it to be him," unquote. May later changed his statement to conform with the official proclamation that Booth had been captured and killed. Well, he was somehow persuaded, either with money or threats, to change his opinion. This happens very often in assassination cases. National Detective Police agents Andrew and Luther Potter had been on the trail of Booth from the beginning. They were called in to identify the corpse. When the blanket was removed, they commented, "He sure grew a mustache in a hurry. Red, too." So you can see, and of course, this information has been suppressed. That was not John Wilkes Booth. It was a body double who was murdered to cover for Booth. Each of the 26 detectives that worked on the case received several thousand dollars apiece after signing quitclaims stating that they had no further interest in the case. This was a big payday 150 years ago. Yeah, many of these guys could retire. In 1922, two Civil War veterans swore an affidavit stating that the body removed from the Garrett farm was not Booth. Joseph Zigen and Wilson Kenzie said that they had served with the cavalry troop which had surrounded the barn. The man dragged from the barn wore a Confederate uniform, and on his feet were yellow brogans, the service footgear of Johnny Reb. I don't know what a brogan is. The two veterans were sworn to secrecy. There are other testimonies that can be recited, each refuting government lies. In reality, John Wilkes Booth was taken to Texas immediately after the assassination, where he lived and worked for many years under the alias of John St. Helen. In 1872, St. Helen was operating a distillery in Glen Rose, Texas, where he ran afoul of revenue agents over whiskey taxes. He hired attorney Finnis Bates to represent him. Bates, the grandfather of Hollywood actress Kathy Bates, Fried Green Tomatoes, Misery, etc., would later write a book about his friendship with St. Helen. One day after contract, or that is John Wilkes Booth, one day after contracting a virulent flu, St. Helen was sure that he was going to die and called Bates to his bedside, wherein he confessed that he was not John St. Helen at all, but rather John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of Abraham Lincoln. Bates was highly skeptical until St. Helen gave him a photograph of himself for future identification purposes. After making a full recovery from his ailments, St. Helen begged Bates to hold his confession in strict confidence. Yeah, well, I'm sure Bates feared for his life, too. Bates would later remark in his book how St. Helen could recite long passages of Shakespeare from memory, and how he was such a remarkable and gifted raconteur, which I believe is storyteller, or perhaps, well, a storyteller is often a liar anyway. After several years, the two drifted apart, with Bates relocating to Memphis and St. Helen later surfacing in Enid, Oklahoma, under the alias of David George, or David St. George, as we found out from the previous articles. Booth, I guess he was maybe trying to make up for his evil by invoking saints. Booth's heavy drinking, combined with his continual boasting of exploits within the KGC, eventually brought him to the attention of Jesse James. Well, the assassinating Abraham Lincoln was an act of what? Infamy. But he wanted to be famous, not infamous. So he couldn't help but boast about it. This was particularly so when Booth was in his cups, that is, drinking heavily, which was more often than not, according to friends in Enid. It was also reported that Booth regularly partook of laudanum, an opium derivative. So he was an opium addict, too. This is when he would become particularly verbose, articulate, talkative, etc. The outlaw Jesse James was not killed by Bob Ford in 1882. Jesse faked his death as an expedient way to throw off Pinkerton agents, assorted railroad barons, gunfighters trying to establish their bona fides, and the dozens of bounty hunters scouring the country for James in order to claim the various rewards offered for his capture and or death. He and Ford would go on to be partners in many business ventures spanning decades. James operated under more than 50 aliases in his long life before dying at the advanced age of 107 under the alias as J. Frank Dalton in 1951. I guess this is his homage to the Dalton gang in Lawton, Oklahoma, or Lawton, rather, Oklahoma. So he lived to the ripe age of 107. What a fascinating life. Jesse was a 33rd degree Freemason and a high-ranking Knight of the Golden Circle. The KGC evolved from a Scottish secret group known as the Society of the Horseman's Word, otherwise known as the Horse Whisperers. They're still around. This fraternity recited passages from the Bible backwards and practiced folk magic as part of their rituals, in addition to having Masonic-style oaths. Headquarters for the Knights of the Golden Circle was 814 Fatherland Drive in Nashville, although it was founded in Cincinnati by George W. Bickley. This was the home of KGC operative Frank James, elder brother of Jesse James. Years later, it became the Dixie Tabernacle, originally home of the Grand Old Opry. The KGC claimed 200,000 members all over America during the war. As I told you, the South had a standing army called the Knights of the Golden Circle. All of the men in Lincoln's cabinet were knights, save for Lincoln. I'm not so sure about that. Maybe Stanton was. Because Stanton made sure that there was at least one bridge across the Potomac, which unguarded, which John Wilkes Booth used. Their goal was to foment as much chaos and discord as possible in order to keep the country divided and to usher in a Rothschild-owned central bank. Well, I don't think the members of the KGC were privy to the Rothschild connection, but this is correct. Whether they realized that that was the goal or not, that's what they were doing. The Rothschilds definitely were using the KGC as they were using B'nai B'rith and the Freemasons for their purposes. But Lincoln had his own plans. During his presidency, his 50% tariff jump-started the American steel industry, while his railroads, subsidies for mining, free land for farmers, and free state colleges transformed a bankrupt cotton exporting country into the world's greatest industrial power within 25 years. Now, by the way, Jefferson Davis had similar plans for the South. He wanted a railroad to go from southern capitals all the way to California. But the problem was that railroad would go through barren desert for two-thirds of the distance from West Texas all the way to California. There's nothing but desert. So it would have been very difficult to build a railroad there. Hard to find water. And so the northern route was decided upon. And, Lincoln's plan, which was also, approved by major operatives of the Democratic Party, such as Stephen Douglas, as the most sensible route, the northern route, because you find water, and there's plenty of buffalo. You could shoot buffalo and have them for dinner, etc., etc. The railroads issued their own money, which they paid the workers, which they could buy goods locally or directly from the railroad company store. A lot of businesses operated that way in those days. So, Lincoln knew that he was waging a separate but equally brutal war against Rothschild-dominated Wall Street firms with his attempt at reasserting government control of credit. He put through anti-usury and other strict banking laws, sold bonds directly to the people, and issued hundreds of millions of national currency. Well, this was actually the plan of Andrew Jackson, who created state banks in opposition to the central bank run by the Rothschilds. With these reforms, Jackson and Lincoln have much more in common economically than people realize. With these reforms, the great emancipator had signed his own death warrant. Yeah, the Rothschilds could care less about the slaves. They were concerned that our government money, constitutional money system, not the Jewish debt money system, would become popular all over the world, and they would be put out of business. Lincoln knew that his time was short. In fact, he had visions of his own death. He confided to his bodyguard, Ward Lamont, a week before he was killed, that he had a vision of his own death. But there were powerful people that believed in him. Well, of course, they were real Americans. And many Southerners, you know, were dragged into the war by the Knights of the Golden Circle, by the Freemasons, and by the Jew banksters. This is a war that never would have happened without Rothschild interference in American politics. During the Civil War, Lincoln negotiated a pact with Tsar Alexander of Russia, whereby the Russian Navy was sent into the ports of San Francisco and New York to help block the Rothschild ships that were running armaments to the South. And that's true. That's very well put. After the appearance of the Russian ships in American waters, the Rothschilds canceled contracts to build more blockade-running boats. Well, it was a losing enterprise. You know, Jews don't like to lose money. The Tsar won the day for the North as Russia promised to go to war with any nation that attacked America. Now you know why the Jews ultimately assassinated the Tsars. They assassinated several Tsars and Russian political leaders, and ultimately they assassinated Russia itself when they financed the Bolshevik Revolution. This is how much the Jews hated the country of Russia because of their involvement, their interference, quote-unquote interference, in the American Civil War. One of the ships anchored in New York Harbor was the Russian frigate Ozliaba. Harper's Weekly carried drawings of the ship in one of its 1863 issues. Civil War photographer Matthew Brady took numerous photographs of the Russian ships. And I'll bet many of you listening had never even heard of the fact that the Tsar sent ships to America on behalf of Abraham Lincoln. This is not an episode of history that you're supposed to know about because it implicates the Rothschilds, don't you know? And on October 5th, 1863, the city of Baltimore issued a proclamation thanking the Tsar for his assistance. In 1867, when the war ended and Lincoln was dead, President Andrew Johnson received a bill in the amount of $7.2 million for the rental of the Russian fleet. The Constitution forbids giving tax dollars to any foreign nation for any reason whatever except for the purchase of land. Johnson directed Secretary of State William Seward to purchase Alaska from the Russians for $7.2 million. These details of Seward's folly have been excised from the historical record. This is because Imperial Russia was the only European country without a central bank, that is, without a Jewish central bank. They had gold and silver. They were the greatest foes of the Rothschild syndicate. Also, since the time of the Empress Elizabeth, Russian Jews had been confined to an area known as the Pale of Settlement. Jews could not live beyond the Pale. Oh, those poor Jews! They couldn't exploit the Christian peasants of Russia. Long ago, attempts were made to remove all Jews from Russia entirely, unless they converted to the Orthodox Church. Now, you know that doesn't work. They just turn into crypto-Jews. They infiltrate the churches while still practicing Judaism in secret. Unfortunately, our leaders never learned from history. The Pale of Settlement was the next best solution. The Rothschilds underwrote the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917. The murder of Tsar Nicholas and his family was their revenge for the treatment of their co-religionists in times past and for daring to stand against the inauguration of a Rothschild-dominated central bank. Let me repeat. This is an excellent article. Again, this is from conspiracyarchive.com. The article is entitled What You Didn't Know About John Wilkes Booth and Jesse James by Mark Owen, posted January 19, 2011. This is an outstanding article. Conspiracyarchive.com. There are very, very few articles that directly implicate the Rothschilds in the American Civil War. This is one of the very few. And the Rothschilds also underwrote the financing of the Knights of the Golden Circle. Well, yeah, they were just an offshoot of the Freemasons. And the Rothschilds and the Jewish secret society called B'nai B'rith, which was formed in Charleston, South Carolina, where the first shots of the Civil War were formed. Charleston, South Carolina was the headquarters, conspiracy central of the Rothschilds and the Jews. They're the ones who orchestrated the American Civil War. You are listening to the Restoration Hour here at freedomslips.com, simulcasting on Eurofolk Radio, where you get the truth. And sometimes the truth is bitter and hard to swallow. Just as it says, as the Bible says in the book of Revelation, once the printing press was invented and the common white people of Europe were able to read the Bible for themselves, it was very sweet to the mouth because they finally were able to read the Bible, but then it was very bitter in the stomach because they found out they had been lied to by the Roman Catholic hierarchy and the Bible had been misrepresented to them for centuries by the papacy. It was very bitter. Well, the truth is often a very bitter pill, folks. And I do not apologize for doling out these bitter pills, but they will perk you up and make you healthy and bring you back to life, like those bones of Ezekiel's story, the dead men's bones of Ezekiel's story coming back to life. Because the truth energizes you and brings you back to life. So if you appreciate the truth that's being presented here, please go to www.freedomslips.com and make a generous donation of Federal Reserve notes, Rothschild Federal Reserve notes. LBJ actually took the greenbacks out of circulation right after he assassinated Kennedy. And support freedom of speech. That's the least you can do for your country and for your people. So getting back to this tremendous article, this is really tremendous because it really gives a lot of information about the Rothschilds. Their gold and dollars were laundered. And the Rothschilds also underwrote the financing of the Knights of the Golden Circle. Their gold and dollars were laundered through a Montreal bank by Rothschild asset and Confederate Secretary of State Judah Benjamin, the brains of the revolt. Okay, so you see the Rothschilds and Judah P. Benjamin working together through the Montreal Bank, controlling the South. I have been telling you for months now, for years actually, that the American Civil War was orchestrated by the Rothschilds and their agents, both North and South, agitating against both sides, consciously agitating. And the brains in the North was August Belmont, a Jewish banker put here by the Rothschilds to finance the Northern Enterprise, and many other double agents controlling both sides, the Northern abolitionists and the Southern secessionists. It was all orchestrated by the Rothschilds. And 600,000 white men perished in that struggle. Benjamin was running so many Confederate spies out of Montreal that it was known as the Second Richmond. Benjamin was very wealthy and owned a sugar plantation manned by 140 slaves. Last week, I talked to you about the Jewish attitude towards slavery up to and including a civil war, and they were closed mouth about the subject because they didn't want to declare themselves, because they wanted to see which way the wind blew. And when it was becoming obvious that slavery was a dead letter, they sold off their slave holdings and went into the liquor business or in many other businesses, primarily banking. And, carpet bagging. After the war, he fled Richmond and eventually wound up in London, where he made a very comfortable living as a Queen's Counsel, obviously put there by the Rothschilds. It is difficult to get data on Benjamin, as he burned his personal notes and so frequently that one historian referred to him as a virtual incendiary. Yeah, the Jews burned books silently by removing them from the bookstores and by removing them from the library shelves. They don't make a big scene like Hitler did of burning Jewish smut. At his death, he left 6 scraps of paper. He left no articles or essays on his role in the Civil War, although he did pen a letter to the Times of London in 1883, refuting charges that millions of Confederate dollars were left in European banks under his control. No, that was the case. When he sailed from, I think it was from New Orleans, although he spent a lot of time elsewhere, I think he managed to get back to New Orleans and sailed back to London with millions of dollars in gold and other assets that he basically pilfered from the South when it was clear that the South had lost the Civil War. After the Lincoln assassination, police found decoding sheets in Booth's Washington hotel room. A matching coding device was found in Benjamin's Richmond office. Returning to John St. Helen, David George, John Wilkes Booth, Jesse James was the treasurer and controller in sole possession of all gold and silver bullion and money of the Knights of the Golden Circle. Well, not the sole possession. I'm sure, you know, there were other people who were robbing banks and holding up trains, etc. Not all of that gold made its way into Jesse James' hand. In this capacity, he paid Booth an annual pension of $3,600 with the proviso that Booth honor his KGC oath of secrecy and never talk about their activities or the Lincoln assassination. He and other knights repeatedly warned Booth to curb his loose tongue, but to no avail. Now, this information was presented in the other article, but we see there's more details in this article about that. Jesse had no choice but to silence his lodge brother. Jesse tracked Booth to the Grand Hotel in Enid, Oklahoma, one winter evening in 1903. Jesse made Booth drink a large glass of lemonade laced with a copious quantity of arsenic. Booth drank the lemonade and quickly expired. Jesse scattered many of Booth's papers around the corpse for easy identification. He then went down to the hotel lobby. Certainly the U.S. Marshals didn't. They should have called the Texas Rangers. And gave the manager a gold coin and asked him to look in on his friend David George in the morning. As George was... this is an interesting detail. So after Jesse James and Mr. Lincoln, the other article reported the cooperation of one of Lincoln's relatives in this whole affair. This article omits that information. He then went down to the hotel lobby and gave the manager a gold coin and asked him to look in on his friend David George in the morning as George was feeling ill. Boy, he's a cool customer. The next day, the press had a field day. The story exploded. Thousands of reporters came to Enid from all over the country to report on the death of John Wilkes Booth. Yet we're still told by official sources today that John Wilkes Booth expired on that farm. No, he didn't, folks. They murdered another man, a lookalike, and Booth got away. Booth's body was taken to a mortuary across the street from the hotel that was owned by W.D. Pennyman. Many people identified the corpse as Booth, including a retired couple named Harper, whom Booth had confided in. Pennyman embalmed the body and coated it with Vaseline. In addition to the arsenic, the body was embalmed and coated with Vaseline, I guess, to prevent the skin from flaking off. The arsenic went a long way to preserving the skin. Booth's attorney, Finnis Bates, read the press reports in Memphis and hastened to Enid, where he identified the body as that of his former friend, John St. Helen, a.k.a. John Wilkes Booth, among other aliases. A funeral trade journal in 1909 stated that within a few weeks, the corpse had the drawn and tanned look of an old mummy. And of course, it was paraded around the country. Pennyman laid Booth out in his mortuary and charged curiosity seekers 10 cents a peek. Tourists viewing the corpse would steal the collar buttons and sometimes remove the locks of her hair for souvenirs. One intrepid visitor tried to sever one of the mummy's ears with a pocket knife. But when the drawing power of the Booth mummy waned, Pennyman handed over the body to Finnis Bates, who had claimed it from the very beginning. Later on, Bates rented out the body to carnivals and sideshows. The corpse traveled for years as part of a show featuring freaks and strange animals. It even emerged unscathed from a circus train wreck that killed 8 people. At one point, the mummy was even kidnapped and ransomed. This is a famous mummy, folks, in its day. In 1931, but nothing about this in the history books. In 1931, it turned up in Chicago, where a group of doctors performed an autopsy and took an x-ray and pronounced its Booth-like injuries authentic. Well, if you have a broken leg, the remains would be there in your bones. In 1932, a couple named Harkin bought the mummy and displayed it from the back of their truck. Hecklers would sometimes claim that the mummy was made out of wax, but Mrs. Harkin silenced them by rolling the mummy over and opening a flap on its back that had been cut away during the original autopsy. The mummy wore nothing but khaki shorts, and between shows, Mrs. Harkin would lacquer the skin with Vaseline and comb its hair. That's show business, folks. That's show business. Some wag declared that John Wilkes Booth was back in show business. Bigger than ever. The mummy vanished from the public eye in the 1950s. See, that's what you get by taking it to Chicago. That's where it disappeared. So, folks, this is what? It's a circus. It's a circus animal. A circus figure, wax figure at a circus. There's no doubt that John Wilkes Booth did not die after assassinating Abraham Lincoln. He was aided by the Knights of the Golden Circle, and he lived fairly long, as these reports have told us, until about 1903, with Jesse James living to approximately 1953. At the age of 107. So, we're talking real history, folks. Some of these titles that are referenced here in this article. Escape and Suicide of John Wilkes Booth by Finnis Bates. Escape and Wanderings of John Wilkes Booth by W.P. Campbell. Return of Assassin John Wilkes Booth by W.C. Jameson. Lincoln Money Martyred by Fabius Melton Butler. This One Mad Act by Isola Forrester. She is actually a descendant of John Wilkes Booth. Murdering Mr. Lincoln by Charles Higman. The Lincoln Conspiracy by David Balsiger. Jesse James, United States Senator, by Ralph Epperson. Mr. Epperson was actually interviewed by one of our show hosts at Eurofolk Radio. Jesse James and the Lost Cause by Jesse Lee James, the grandson of Jesse James. Jesse James was one of his names by Del Schrader, a book which we consulted in the previous hour. So you see that the American Civil War and the history we have been taught is nothing but lies. Nothing but lies, as is mainstream media, etc. The educational system is utterly controlled by Jews. That's why you never get the truth about anything, let alone history. What passes as history is nothing but cover-ups designed to prevent you knowing how the Jews have been destroying our race since the Pharisees came to power under Herod. And they have been killing. Even Yahshua said they kill us all the day long because of our ignorance, our apathy, and our gullibility. Mainly our gullibility. And so that's why we're here, is to cure this gullibility and give you the ability to see through the charade that is Judaism, the murderous, genocidal charade that is Judaism. We are living in a world of grandiose deceit that cannot be cured by the system. The Jews control the system. They can, by the way, I think today is the wedding of Meghan Markle, or is it Angela Merkel? And Prince Harry. And they have hired a black Chicago minister to perform the ceremony. Maybe she's related to this minister, Meghan Markle, that is, because she is half black. So all the taboos that used to run through the British monarchy are being broken at the present time. There's not much time left. We are in the end times, and it's all going to collapse very soon. But I'm here to present these facts to you so you can be on the correct side when the shinola hits the fan, folks. This grandiose deceit of the Jews is topic number one. Topic number one that should be on everybody's mind. And for the few minutes we have left, I'm going to be quoting from theendofzion.com, Masters of Deceit, A Short History of the Jews, by Ben Klassen. Very interesting, Ben Klassen. And some people have said that even Ben Klassen himself is Jewish. So they will pose as, how should I put it? They will pose as anti-Zionists, and there's many Jews posing as anti-Zionists. And while posing as such, they will reveal a lot of truth. You know, just to have credibility, just to have credibility. And this is a very popular, activity of many Jews, is to pose as anti-Jewish. So I'm going to post this here in the chat room, and we'll just do a little bit of reading from it to conclude today's show, because this is excellent. Excellent information, even though it is by Ben Klassen, who was actually a criminal. He was a mafioso. Here we go. Masters of Deceit, A Short History of the Jews. Well, If he is Jewish, he ought to know. Nature, in her infinite wisdom, has put the highest premium on survival. Very much anti-Christian. Very much an anti-Christian. Nature, in her infinite wisdom, has put the highest premium on survival of the species. In her profuse variety, nature has brought forth creatures of all kinds. So has the devil. Fish and fowl, animal and vegetable, insect and bacteria. Some creatures, like the cardinal and bluebird, are beautiful to behold. Others, like the scorpionfish and the lizard, are not. Some creatures are the flesh-eating. Oh, some creatures are flesh-eating. Okay. Others, like the scorpionfish, others are herbivorous. Some animals, like cows, forage on the grass of the meadows. Others, like the coyote, the wolf, and the tiger, are predatory. Other creatures, like cockroaches, mosquitoes, and maggots, are parasitic. Each creature has its means of existence and survival and its means of perpetuating its species. In all, the will to live and perpetuate its own kind is intensely strong. If it were not, the species would soon have died out. So, I think what he's getting at is the Jews are parasites. In the human species, there is one race that stands out above all others in the intensity and fierceness in its will to survive. That is the Jewish race. It's got a love-hate relationship to the white race because they need to feed off of us. We are their primary host. So they hate us because of who and what we are, and they love us because we're their food. How this one race has survived and stayed intact through all the convulsions and upheavals of history for over 5,000 years is something remarkable to behold. Well, of course, he's going to tell us that the Jews are the Israel of the Bible, which we know better. And this is what all of these white nationalists believe, and it's a lie. The Jews did not write a single word of the Bible. They are imposters. The Jews are the Edomites of the Bible, posing as Israel, a fact which began under John Hyrcanus when he began circumcising against Yahweh's law, Edomites, and bringing them into the nation called Judea. Before it was called Judea, it was simply called the land of Judah, because the Judahites, the pure-blooded, white, Aryan, Adamic Judahites, ruled that land. Once John Hyrcanus began circumcising Edomites and bringing them into nation, it began to be called Judea, because it was a mixture of Idumea, the Greek word for Edom, and Judah. So it became known as Judea, a mixed race state, thanks to John Hyrcanus. And it was under Herod and his father Antipater who actually paid the Roman army to come in and invade with Herod to take over Judah and turn it into Judea. And it was Herod who assassinated all the pure-blooded, white, Aryan, Adamic priests of Judah and replaced them with Edomite Jews. Whereas some of the ancient races of recorded history, such as the Babylonians, the Romans, the Phoenicians, the Egyptians, as a race, have all gone down the sinkhole of history, well, yeah, the Babylonians were not a race. Babylonians were a mixed race empire. So were the Assyrians, although the leaders were Aryans, so no doubt about that. The Phoenicians were, in fact, Israelites. The Egyptians were white Hamites originally. There are no such thing today. The Jew has survived. Why has the Jew survived? Well, because they were parasites. And when those nations died, the Jews had a lot of money, and they just moved on to the next host. Pretty easy for them to do. Not only has he survived, but he has become the slave master of all the other races of the world, although he only numbers a small percentage of the world's population. And of course, the Bible says that Israel would become a humongous company of people, a company of nations, and the Jews have done no such thing. So if you actually read the Bible and compare the prophecies of Israel to the Jews, you will see that the Jews don't fulfill a single prophecy of the Bible. concerning Israel. They do fulfill the prophecies concerning Edom, however. Whereas the glorious white race has been a builder, explorer, and creator of civilizations, of governments and nations, the Jews has been none of these. Well, all of these things were prophesied of Israel in the Bible, Mr. Klassen. On the contrary, the Jew has been the very antithesis of the noble white man. Thank you very much. Folks, thanks for listening. This has been the story of Jesse James and John Wilkes Booth, agents, the Rothschilds. Can you believe it? Next week, praise the best end of next time.
Kid, what do you see? Homes being foreclosed. People working 2-3 jobs just to put food on the table and still drowning in debt. Don't get me wrong. This country was founded on great ideals and principles. They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes to the banks that are robbing you. You know who my favorite president was?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. Because he saw all of this coming and tried to stop it. He fought the banks. JFK too, and they killed him for it. The banking institution is more dangerous than an army, he said. He also said that every generation needs a revolution, Jimmy. The American dream is just that. Just a dream. War is a continuation of politics, only by other means. Politics is a continuation of economics by other means. This is our bank. This is our war. And this is our plan of attack.
Banks have become an essential threat to our democracy. So consider this justice.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Radio!
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Join me weekdays for my new show, Tell Chris Joe. It's going to be a problem show brought to you live from Kensington. Thursdays, I'm dealing with hot topics, heated debate, what's new around the world, and ring-ins to discuss listeners' problems and offering considered and heartfelt solutions. So join me, Chris Hart, for Tell Chris Joe. Stop what you're doing, grab a cup of tea, and coming live from Kensington. Relax. Let me entertain you with a coffee bar online. Listeners, very personal problems. So that's Thursdays, 2 p.m. in the afternoon, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. see you there. It's going to be lots of fun.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener.